Blog Talk Radio. the darkness, that illuminating energy that is within your soul extends to the outermost parts of your body. When we talk of the darkness, we think of it being pitch black dark. But think of an energy that's so powerful that is dark and it's illuminating light at the same exact time. When you have gone deep within yourself and gone into that black hole in your heart, you can understand that within your body is darkness, but at the same time there's light. That's why you feel the heat in the middle of your chest. There's an illuminating light that's within you. But the only way to activate that light is through meditation, believing in yourself. That's how you go into the darkness. That's how you go into that energy that cannot be explained. You know, brother and I was talking last night at my workplace, and we was talking, and then, you know, our discussion was about these dark energy machines that these work beings had created. And they created some machines to try to harness dark energy that was targeted. But what we discovered in our conversation was that the machines were made directly from our melanin, our carbon bodies. Yes, this is the technology that they're trying to create. And they were trying to harness dark energy by using the machines made directly from our bodies. These were artificial intelligence machines, AI machines that were made from our bodies. But what they were missing was a soul. See, it is the soul that pulls in the darkness. It is your soul. This is where all of your power comes from, your soul. Your soul is connected directly to your heart. Is that correctly connected directly to your spirit? Your soul is the source that pulls in that dark energy. That's that dark energy. That's that light within you. The darkness, the Christ, the Luciferian energy, the demonic forces, the satanic realm, all of this is within you. So when you have gone into the most intimate parts of yourself through meditation, tapping into this most powerful energy called the dark energy, you are becoming illuminated. Therefore, as you walk among your own brother and sister, they will look at you strangely like, who are you? Because they will see the light in you. And the light will be so powerful, this darkness will be so powerful that they will want to literally say, I want whatever you got, because whatever you have, when I'm around you, I feel good. I feel protected. I feel powerful. There's a lot of brothers and sisters who hang around brothers and sisters who are into this, what we call dark energy. That's the original powerful, the spiritual energy that we originally began with. And as you begin to grow deeper, you begin to cleanse yourself of foolishness, and you begin to seek for higher knowledge of this dark energy. The machines that we had in the days of old, I talked about this before, the machines that we had in the days of old were machines that were created, and these machines literally had a soul, because we created them from nature and we put our heart and soul into it. So therefore, the machines that we have were made directly from nature and connected to nature to work with the energy in nature. That's why they could move on their own. If we were thousands of miles away, we could link into that machine and we could talk to that machine. And the machine, because we put a soul into it, we're the only beings who can put a soul into the machinery. that machine would come to us, and that's all because we were linked into the darkness. The darkness is our light. Our light is created from the darkness. This is why you must understand the concept of the Luciferian energy, the demonic forces, the satanic realm. Okay? It's highly important that you understand that, because this is what takes you to a whole new level of power. When you realize that the satanic realm and the demonic forces are within your soul. Therefore, when you get to your heart, you're tapping into the Holy Spirit, which is cosmic energy. And then you get to your mind, where you have a Christ consciousness, which is the light. See how it all works together? These are all connected together. This is what gives you the ability to control the forces. Magnetism, wind, water, fire, electricity, all of the forces. Because of the darkness that's within you. That's the importance of going deeper into the darkness and finding who you are. You can only find your power when you go into the darkness. Remember, the emptiness is full of energy and light. The emptiness, the darkness, the nothingness. All right? This is where all your power is. That's why when you go into meditation, all right, and seeking out for power, you're in darkness, and therefore you see beings in the darkness, but they have a dark glow about themselves, which means you're able to see them because you have illuminated the darkness through the light within you. You say, I saw such this, and I saw this, I saw this, I saw this, but they were dark. But you had illuminated the darkness through the light. I was in my meditation and I saw a little boy, and he was looking directly at me, and his mother came and his sister came, and she looked at me. She says, stop staring at him. Come on, let's go. I'm like, they see me. So it's important that you understand the darkness is where your power is. This is where you can connect directly into the light. Now, when you go deeper into the darkness, you're going to have different things. You know, you're going to have an increased heart rate. All right? You might feel like it's like palpitation. This belongs to us. Don't let the doctors tell you, you got high blood pressure, you got hypertension, and I got to give you this pill, because that pill is designed to make you paralyzed from the darkness. It's a chemical. You don't have hypertension when you start going into the darkness and the forces. There's no hypertension, high blood pressure. This is your body becoming more powerful. That means your blood is flowing faster. The energy within you is becoming more powerful. You will have an increased metabolism. So when you eat your food is going to dissolve faster. It's going to digest faster, which means that you're going to want to be more hungry. You're going to be more hungrier, all right? So you feed yourself more vegetables and more fruit, and that's going to keep your vibrations high, your frequencies high. The darkness is where all of your power is. You're flowing into this energy. You're becoming one with the darkness, one with the force, one with the energy. May the force be with you, because dark energy is a force. May the force be with you. Therefore, like we say, you go into the nothingness. It's full of all the powers that you need. You can link into infinite powers. your soul will start telling you, well, go to this power. You'd be like, I never heard of this name before. Because your soul knows these different things. But if you never take your soul into that place of infinite nothingness, then you won't know what to do. Your soul will say, oh, this is the power of such and such. This power is named Seraki. This power is named Kebara. This power is named Allah, Shabakuna. All right? You're like, what is this name? I never heard of this stuff before. Because these names, these powers have no English names. There is no English name. These are ancient names. Kumar and Setar, Dado Muta. You know, this is your soul will tell you what this is. And your soul will tell you, will show you the way to go into certain levels of Tai Chi to activate the power. And once you get that information, you try it, you practice it. Your soul may tell you, this is what the symbol stands for. This is what the symbol for. So now you draw the symbol of that power. And you look at it, you put your hand over it, and you absorb the energy through your hand, right, of that power. So this is what we understand, that the darkness is highly, highly important to our upbringing. Highly important. Because this is when you begin to illuminate. You illuminate. When you go into the darkness, you become more powerful, become more mightier, become mightier than ever. This is the force that takes you to powers unknown to mankind. Like I said, they tried to create a machine from our bodies to harness dark energy, but it was unsuccessful because the machine didn't have a soul. You must have a soul. You must do this wholeheartedly. You must do this to connect to nature. Everything these beings have created is against nature. So it's highly important that you understand the darkness. Understand that you have a glow about yourself when you go into the darkness, and your enemies cannot look you face to face. They will walk past you or turn their heads. And some of these young orcs will say, I want a piece of what he's got. I want that energy. I remember watching the last movie V, and they actually took it off when the queen reptilian said, that's what I want. I want their soul. And after she said, after that episode, they took it off. Because she said, I want their soul. I want the, and it was like, that was something that was like, wow, this is what they want. They want our soul. They exposed themselves in that show. They want our soul. So they can operate and try to control the darkness. They want our soul. This is how desperate they are. This is what they're after. Understand the darkness. It's a force that's within you that only you can tap into when you go into meditation. And you go within yourself and you can find all the answers that you need around you. The darkness will speak to you. The darkness is alive. It's an organism. The darkness will speak to you. Will give you instructions. Will tell you how to move, things to do, what to say and how to say it, what not to say, what not to do. The darkness will speak to you. The darkness is very much alive. The darkness is not dead. It's an energy, and energy never dies. Energy flows. So this dark energy that's returning to the planet, the bulk of the dark energy is returning to the planet, is coming back to bring back balance. So as you pull in more of this dark energy, you bring it closer to the planet. The darkness is where the light is. For there is no light without darkness. Because the light depends on the darkness. Remember, the demonic forces, the satanic realm, that's not evil. The demonic forces, the satanic realm, are the most highest places ever to be within. This is when you control everything around you. The kinetic energy, the darkness, the magnetism, electricity, fire, the wind, the water. You know, all these, everything that you can think of that has force through nature all depends upon the darkness. And you are the ones who can bring this power back to the planet by going into the darkness. Glad to be with you guys. All power to the Moji Chakra Celestial Energy Beings. Peace to you all.
Enhance your mind. Recharge your spirit. Awaken your soul. Enhancing Awareness Radio. Enhancing awareness with clarity.
At last, this is it. My life as Spider-Man is over. All I need is a superhero retirement pension, and everything would be perfect.
My dear boy, what? Whoever said that every...
All I need is a superhero retirement pension, and everything would be perfect.
My dear boy, what? Whoever said... Everything was supposed to be perfect.
Who said that?
I.
Who's there? Who are you?
Isn't the real question, who are you?
What's this? Some phony fortune telling?
Phony? What? You are the phony.
How did you know what I was thinking?
I know much more than your trivial thoughts, Spider-Man.
I'm not Spider-Man.
You are a terrible liar. Please, don't waste my time.
What?
I am not your enemy, Peter Parker. You are. Isn't it strange that with all the power you have, you've hurt so many of those close to you? Your Uncle Ben, Felicia Hardy, Mary Jane.
How do you know about them?
Come see me to find out.
I can't do it. How to get on me? Good going, Spidey. You walked right into a trap.
You are wrong, Parker. And you knew.
How do you know who I am? And how do you know so much about me? I want some answers.
You will get them. Now, sit down.
I'll stand, thanks.
It is usually a good idea to have a seat when your world is about to be turned upside down.
Whoa!
You are about to embark on a period of training for a mission. I will soon require of you.
The only thing I'm embarking on is a trip out of here.
Parker, this is one situation you cannot crawl away from. In order to succeed in this mission, you must first overcome the self-pity that threatens to end your career.
What do you need me for? You obviously have powers of your own.
Powers are nothing. More important is your tendency to question yourself. That is an interesting quality. Tedious, but interesting. This is your card.
No thanks. I'm not what you'd call a believer.
Not so easy, is it? It is telling you that you must believe in me. And you must have the faith of a child.
What's that supposed to mean?
No, wait!
Did I just take a trip through the Twilight Zone or what?
Well, this kind of weird stuff is why I'm quitting.
Hey, it's that letter Robbie gave me. How did it get here? Huh.
This evening, we have a subject that is almost certain to become controversial. Found himself plagued with circumstances destructive to his happiness, his health, and even his life. He had to... This evening, we have a subject that is almost certain to become controversial. So, I'm going to ask you to think as quietly and carefully as you can and see if perhaps some of the points that I want to make are really more obvious than you might first imagine. You must give a certain background to this discussion because actually most of our concepts of demonism, black magic, witchcraft, and diabolism belong to long traditional concepts and beliefs which have endured in our way of life over thousands of years. First of all, I think we should make one rather important differentiation. Most of the demons of antiquity were comparatively respectable creatures. The ancients believed that there were in nature spirits both good and bad. Good spirits they called gods, or in nature worship, kami, or elemental beings. Evil spirits, they regarded as more spiteful and malicious by their natural intention. And these two orders of invisibles were used to explain a variety of natural phenomena. But things went well with man. He was grateful to his gods. And when things went badly, he propitiated his devils. For he assumed at an early time, and apparently quite sensibly, that God and the subordinate deities that attended the supreme being could not be the cause of evil. Yet as a mortal physical creature, man experienced certain disasters which he called evil. He found himself plagued with circumstances destructive to his happiness, his health, and even his life. He had to explain how it was that a good God ruling over a good world could produce destructive situations. To meet this need, orders of beings subordinate to deities, but still by nature malicious, were conjured into reality. Perhaps man copied this concept in turn from his own associates in this world. He discovered what we all find, that some of our associates are nice people and some prove treacherous or destructive. Some of our friends are faithful and others faithless. It appears that certain phases or aspects of our way of life are protective and others are destructive. And today we explain these differences on moral or ethical or cultural or legal grounds. But still we are faced by these two parallel lines of occurrences, one helpful and the other hurtful. Going back over the history of primitive demonism, we note that nearly all of the so-called destructive forces were regarded as entities in themselves. They were sprites or mysterious little beings of nature capricious and malicious, but they operated almost completely according to their own natures. They afflicted or burdened people because apparently they enjoyed doing these things. Irish folklore is full of mischievous beings who seem to like to play pranks on innocent mortals. Most of these older demons, therefore, were an order of life, just in the same way that the various Greek divinities originated in some region of their own, had their own way of life, and only occasionally came into contact with mankind. This contact could also often be altered. Malicious spirits could be made at least temporarily friendly by offerings and by various gifts and by propitiations, as they were called. It did not seem to occur to these older peoples that these spirits were other than what they seemed to, be, some kind of a hierarchy of entities inhabiting their own worlds and coming in contact with man only on very rare occasions. The second type of spirit that was regarded as hurtful or harmful was the individual who died with great evil or great hate in his heart. If we wronged someone terribly and he died, we conceived that he might haunt us. Perhaps this haunting was mostly the voice of our own conscience. We may have realized that this person went out of this world injured by us, and that perhaps had he a survival after death, he might resent this injury and continue to avenge it from the other world as he might have liked to do it from here. So we have this kind of spirit being, the souls of the unhappy dead. This more or less exhausted the Greek concept. The Greeks were never particularly devoted to demonology. They kind of liked life. They enjoyed nature. Their religion was a rather buoyant, festive kind. They would much rather live in a world filled with good spirits than with evil ones. Our word demon, however, has been derived from the Greek. In the Greek form, daemon, it did not signify an evil being at all. It simply represented a creature from another dimension might have some contact with earthly affairs. Socrates had a demon, according to his own records. And this was a godlike creature who warned him of impending evil and harm and protected him on many occasions through life. So the Greek concept of the daemon was very little different from their concept of the demigod, except perhaps that the daemon was a little more available was present upon requirement, more definitely and more consistently. We have practically no records among the Greeks, for instance, that they ever tried to use one of their spirits to harm any other person. These spirits were protectors and guardians and friends. But there were orders of spirits that were by nature inclined to be malicious or meddlesome, but the Greeks generally handled those rather successfully by putting out a little bowl of food or offering a prayer or making some little promise that they would do a favor for the spirit if the spirit would be kindly to them. It was rather a childish state of affairs and never got very much beyond that point. Among Oriental nations, there is an elaborate study of demonism of all kinds. But I rather suspect that we have been somewhat over-influenced by missionary reports. I think the demonism of Asia was very much like that of Greece. I know that today, in Asiatic countries, there is very little fear of evil spirits, even where they are believed in. They are not regarded as being particularly dangerous. Japan has its little oni, its little goblins. But if you want to get goblins out of the house for the year, all you have to do is throw some beans at them at the Setsubun Festival, and they depart for the rest of the year. They're really not very tenacious or especially difficult. I saw a book of Japanese paintings not long ago called Recreations of Hell. It was a delightful little thing, which would indicate that the oni, or spirits, were more or less unionized, or something of that nature, and that in their spare time they went fishing, had picnics, and gathered in some quiet bamboo grove and drank sake together. This seemed to be about their principal activity. Now, in almost all countries where Buddhism has been introduced, we have the same consistent story, namely that the Buddhist teachers immediately converted the demons. Demons just didn't have a chance where Buddhist missionaries went out. Even in Tibet, when Padmasambhava converted the country, he converted all of the evil spirits, and they all became good Buddhists, and they became servants of righteousness ever after. The only function that was left to them was the right to just groan and grumble a little bit and perform just a few little examples of their powers in order to sort of frighten people back on the straight and narrow road again. They became helpers whose only remaining function was to warn people against being bad. Now, this situation also seems to follow in many other parts of the world. China, I suppose, is supposed to have had more demons than all the firecrackers in Asia could frighten away. But again, these demons did not seem to be particularly ferocious. We have many representations in painting and carving of the most horrible scenes of demons punishing lost souls. But no one really seemed to pay much attention to it. And there's no indication that it improved the virtue of the people to any appreciable degree. These ideas just didn't sink in. The native attitude just was not appropriate to it. The general way of life was essentially you can't say happy exactly, because many of these people were miserably underprivileged, at least we may say that the general temper was optimistic. People wanted to believe that good things would happen not only in this world, but the world to come. And they also had a deep conviction that whatever their religion was, that their prayers and their mantras and their various teachings would ensure them against being very deeply plagued by any sinister force. In none of these older countries do we find a kind of demonism in which the demon can stand against God. There is no possibility of rebellion on this level. The demon is a nuisance, principally, represented as perhaps having some minor right to plague unfortunate humans, but even the demon himself rather inclined to repent of his evil ways and depart with very slight encouragement. Actually, I think the Chinese, most of these people, were more afraid of ghosts than they were of demons. Our philosophy in the West, however, seems to have from the beginning developed a rather neurotic attitude on this subject. In both the Old and New Testament, demonology seems to play a very real and significant part. And then as we went along through time, particularly in the Dark Ages, demons became very terrible sources of negative belief. They plagued everybody. The early Christian missionaries enlarged the population of the infernal region by populating it with all the pagans and all their divinities. This made it a rather congested area. Furthermore, the early church developed some very aggressive attitudes about how easy it was for a human being to lose his soul. He hardly had to do anything except miss one mass and he was in trouble. Evil was ever nigh unto him, as St. Paul tells us, and he meant it. And he meant it very literally. Because of this, we see in Western civilization, all the way from the Mediterranean to Ireland, and all the way from the southern tip of Sicily to the most Nordic lands, this very great fear, this almost neurotic pressure in which the individual lived in an almost constant terror of some weird and terrible force. Here again, however, most of the pattern was firmly set upon what might be called demonism in its classical sense. The demon punished sin. The demons didn't bother good people. They had no reason to. But they had a strange and immediate power over sinners. It would almost seem as though deity had assigned them the right to do this. Whenever a person broke the good rules, he was subject to the punishments and afflictions and burdens that the demons would administer as the agents of divine wrath or punishment. The church, however, had its ups and downs on the subject of demonism. Altogether, I think we can say that the general trend of early Christianity was against demonism. It existed very strongly in local areas. It raised considerable trouble and confusion from time to time. But every once in a while, something that was either common sense or a clearer vision of things would always step in and clear the situation for a while. I think that we can say that the demonism, as it was popularly practiced even in Europe, was never really according to the church canons. It was simply something that local people, especially the ignorant, the peasants, and the fearful and neurotic, the psychotic, developed, and which the clergy in turn tried to exorcise with holy water and church candles. The attitude was periodically to clear this atmosphere and to not allow the concept of demonism to build too strongly in early church history. Wherever it did build, wherever we had waves of this, We had also waves of incredible cruelty. We had horrible disasters, largely the result of morbid imagination. Now, every nation, every people of the world has produced neurotics of some kind. They're an inevitable part of life. Certainly, they are more abundant where the pressures of life have a tendency to become abnormal. But there's always someone to whom healthy, natural, optimistic matters have no meaning. There are always people who live and brood and feel and fear and worry and hate and fuss and maintain jealous, negative attitudes toward each other. Such persons have always existed everywhere in the history of our race. So there have always been psychotics. And today the psychotic presents very much the same problem that he did 3,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. The difference now is that he is operating against a background that is not nearly as credulous as it was in the early times. When a psychotic today sees horrible and destructive visions, this doesn't become the basis of another witchcraft outbreak. It simply now means that this person is judged to be mentally ill. A few hundred years ago, he was not so judged. He could be taken to the steps of the church and exorcised. If he did not recover, he might be subject to torture. If he still did not mend his ways or repent his claims or pretensions, he might well be burned at the stake. This situation does not hold today because we simply have a different attitude toward it. About 1,500 years ago, when Europe was comparatively illiterate, when almost nothing was known of mental medicine, the hysterical person, the unbalanced individual, the psychotic, was an object of the greatest fear. In different areas, of course, this also differed. Among the Greeks, an insane person was said to be under the protection of the gods and was therefore never injured or bothered in any way. But in Europe during the Dark Ages, any person mentally unbalanced was assumed to be possessed of an evil spirit. Something had to be done to get this evil spirit out. And as we know, in most psychotic cases, there is a distinct lowering of the ethical moral threshold, the individual becoming abusive and profane and even animalistic. As a result of mental sickness, it is easy to understand why older nations felt that this person had suddenly become inhabited by some very low and malevolent being. We don't want to labor this phase of the matter too much, but we do know that in the subconscious of our people, in the subconscious of the race, all these old beliefs still lurk. We are, even now, unless we are completely materialistic in our attitudes, a little inclined to wonder, to question, to suspect that perhaps some of these old beliefs had validity. Perhaps somewhere around there is something that does have a forked tail and horns that might cause embarrassment at some moment. This belief, because it has come down to us, and because it has survived in many primitive areas of society, even today, requires or suggests considerable thought. First of all, we know that in modern society, demonism as it was practiced or held to be true in ancient times is now almost totally reserved to so-called backward peoples. It is still largely found in isolated, underprivileged areas. It is found among people who are comparatively illiterate, whose advantages in life have been few, who have been strongly introverted into patterns in which their tribe or their family or their community has been spirit-ridden and ghost-ridden for ages. It does not appear too often in what might be termed a level of higher mental attainment. It is limited to primitive areas, which should give us some idea as to the real state of the matter. Now, in more modern times, during what has been called the Middle Ages, there appeared another problem that really does not stem from real, honest, good old-fashioned constructive demonism. It is a different brand of this belief. It has been called diabolism. And diabolism, or black magic, as it has gradually come to be known, indicates or holds the concept that of two things. First, that evil spirits naturally existing can be controlled or brought into the service of a magician, as in the case of Faust, and that this evil spirit will do the bidding of his master for a certain length of time, sign a pact with him, perhaps sign it in blood. In the European museums and libraries, there are a number of these original pacts, neatly signed in blood. These pacts bound an evil spirit to man for a time. Usually, the pact ended by the evil spirit receiving in payment the soul of the magician. This is the classical pattern and is found in many old works on demonology. But during the duration of the pact, this demon was forced to serve his master, to do anything that his master wanted him to do. Now, in a great many of these old books, we find a very interesting line of thought, which seems to indicate that the demonism actually did arise from older beliefs. For we learn that these demons that were bound by pacts really had no interest in hurting anybody. They were not out trying to make the magician do evil things. Mephisto did not have the slightest interest in advancing the whims of Dr. Faust. Mephisto lived in an entirely different kind of world of his own. As the demon, he represented a debonair personality, worldly wise, sophisticated, attained in all things. To him, Faust was no one but a child, an infantile ignoramus, perfectly willing to sell his own soul for a few years of glory and a little wealth for the fulfillment of his own desires. And as Mephisto himself tells us, he hasn't the slightest interest in Faust's desires. But because of the pact, he is his servant for the duration of the bargain and must do as he is told. In fact, in a few instances, Mephisto actually intercedes and strongly recommends that Faust not do some of these evil things, which are senseless, meaningless, and purposeless. So in the demonology, it wasn't a case of a demon taking great joy in injuring people. It was a bored demon who had no interest in humanity and didn't care whether humans lived or died because he was no part of them. They were not his region. They were not his world. But he had made a bargain. He had signed a contract. He was, so to say, an apprentice to the sorcerer for a while. So he did what he was told and waited patiently until he could inflict final punishment upon the sorcerer himself. This type of diabolism, again, doesn't quite meet the thinking of most people of today. Because here, and this was the typical demonism of the crossroad, where the magic circle was drawn, where the witches of Macbeth brewed their cauldrons, all of this type of medieval tying of spirits, the binding of the powers of nature to the whims of a human being. All of these were based upon a certain power process. There were secret words. There were secret conjurations, magic circles and terms, rites to be performed. And if the magician was able to perform these correctly, he could command the spirit. And if he could command the spirit, then the spirit had to obey him. And the spirit felt really, as several of the old accounts say, and one or two of the spirits do, like Asmodeus in one of the early books, says to the conjurer who has called him out of the misty deep for some nefarious undertaking, "Why have you disturbed me? I have no reason to be here. I don't care anything about you. I don't want to hurt anybody. Why have you bothered me? Why have you said these words of power that now force me to obey you? Because you have the magic talismans, the magic symbols. Why have you done this to me? I don't dislike you. I haven't done anything to you. Why do you insist on binding me to some common human purpose of your own?" This was the rather nonchalant idea. It seems to have carried through from the Greek, in which these spirits were simply part of the citizenry of an invisible empire and really would never bother anybody if humans left them alone. Now, the next phase of the situation takes on a little different coloring. As the result of the binding of spirits by these conjurations and these magical formulas, it came to be believed that human beings could hurt each other. This was a very late development in the idea of demonology, that human beings should want to use evil forces to afflict each other. This was not part of the original concept at all. Ghosts might haunt those who hurt them in life, but not innocent people. And in most countries, the ghost is a kind of a wavering symbol floating in the atmosphere in graveyards at night or something, but not inclined to do anything more than be there, although its presence might frighten some superstitious person out of his wits. But it was not really any particular idea. The concept that either evil wanted to conquer good or could conquer good came late. The idea that man might want to use evil, some kind of an invisible or magical evil, to hurt other people, this was simply not part of primitive ethics in the majority of instances. It arises occasionally, but is certainly of the exception rather than of the rule. But once we began to believe in witchcraft, once we believed that human beings could make pacts with demons, or could develop within themselves some evil force, could pervert their own natures, and begin to burden us with their perversions, like the witches of Europe riding on their broomsticks to the Sabbath on the Brocken, where that human beings themselves voluntarily and of their own inner conviction chose to become evil, chose to hurt or destroy other people, and sought in long and difficult processes to discover means by means of which they could bewitch or haunt or in some way from a distance plague or hurt normal innocent folks. Antiquity had very little room for this concept because it simply did not believe it. It believed that the so-called spirits could exist. It believed that evil people could do evil deeds, but it simply did not develop any strong concept of black magic as we think of it today. It was outside of the grand concept of life which these people held, and they would not permit something to be believed that did not fit into the great theory of the kind of world they lived in. And with the exception of very primitive people, there was no general group in society that believed that the world was created for the purpose of perpetuating evil, or that evil had any chance of conquering good in the long, difficult picture of things. Even in the Mazdean faith, evil had no real power to ultimately achieve victory over good. Good was real. Good was deep and great. Evil was passing. Evil was linked so closely to the infirmities of men that it became more and more obvious that most of the evil that we have attributed to demons really arises in the nature of man himself. That we are the creatures who seem to possess the strange power of being malignant in some way, malicious, malevolent in our conduct towards other people. So in the most part, we come down to comparatively modern times, bringing with us all the grimoires of old, the ancient books of magic and spirits, the pentacles and talismans of Agrippa, the old book of the keys of Solomon the king. We have all these beliefs that have been shadowed down through time, books that have to do with the creation of an empire of sorcery, a sorcery in which all of the common good of life is threatened and the universe is placed at the disposal of the sorcerer. If he can become wise enough, if he can become strong enough, if he can become skillful enough, there seems to be no limit to what he can do to ordinary, well-intentioned, God-fearing people. This concept has lingered on, however, in an extraordinary way. And unless we begin to think it through somewhere, we have to face it more frequently than perhaps we like to really imagine. Even in our most sober moments, we are afraid that somewhere around us, somewhere in space, are powers of evil. That these powers of evil, operating upon us from the invisible, or coming into focus here through persons of evil nature, that these forces can do us great harm. We have also come gradually to lack the marvelous solutions that ancient people had. Most of the time now, the solutions which took care of everything 500 years ago just do not seem to be adequate anymore. We are too smart to believe the solutions, but we are not smart enough not to believe the original idea. In other words, we are foolish enough to believe in these evil principles, but not wise enough or not gullible enough to believe in the simple remedies that always took care of them satisfactorily up to recent times. In those long periods in which we were either blessed or cursed by the lack of psychiatrists, these things more or less took care of themselves. Every community had its own local psychiatrist in the form of an elderly widow or someone of that nature, preferably the seventh daughter of a seventh daughter born with a veil. If we could find her, everything would work out. But how did it work out? Just as it works out in the reservations of Indians down in our New Mexican and Arizona areas today. If you think there is an evil spirit that is trying to do you a little harm, you have to find two stones of a certain shape and size, tie a piece of wool around the stones, and carry them in a little pouch in your pocket or on your body. If you have made this little talisman correctly, you have nothing more to worry about. You're in the clear as far as affliction of that nature is concerned. If you're bewitched, all you have to do is wear your coat inside out for a couple of days, and it's taken care of. These things certainly cause no more trouble. If it's too bad and you just can't handle it yourself, you go to a bruja, which is another witch, and you pay a very reasonable sum for the second witch to bewitch the first one, and then you go home and take things on with your affairs as always. And there's always such nice, easy ways out. In the medieval period, all you had to do was confess, do a penance, and be sprinkled on with a little holy water, and the situation was reasonably well in hand. We still have the fears and the worries, but we've lost confidence in the remedy, and that is a rather sad state of affairs, because we now have no way of getting ourselves out of these attitudes. Once we get into them, it becomes a deep and involved and troublesome process. We just are a little less optimistic about how to cure our own infirmities. That's too much the dependence on the professional level of things. The point to be very definitely made is this, that as time went on and down into the 20th century, we have a kind of black magic that has drifted along, that has taken on, in some instances, a rather respectable and sophisticated look. The old sorcerer with his pointed cap and long black robe covered with stars has vanished. We have now what might almost be termed the mental magician. He has taken the place of all these other things. But we do still believe that people exist who want to hurt us. We also believe that there are certain persons who can hurt us. And whether this hurting is done by means of chaining a demon, or whether it is done by the natural orneriness of the magician himself, makes very little difference to the sufferer. He actually believes that he is in constant psychic or spiritual danger due to the malicious intent of someone else. Now, that this should be a belief is quite understandable. Our so-called level or veneer of sophistication is pretty thin. And beneath the surface of our so-called mental advancements and attainments, there is still very much of the primitive and very much of the frightened. We all live very largely influenced by fear. And fear is a mysterious thing and is most deadly and most dangerous when the object of that fear is most difficult to isolate or distinguish. Blind fear is the most terrible thing of all, because there's no way you can open your eyes for it. It is simply there as a terrible compulsion to terror within yourself. And nothing that man has ever developed in the form of sophistications apparently can touch this basic atavistic anxiety which is within him. So we are all born with it. We all have to struggle with it. And we all have to solve it much as we solve every other problem in life, mostly by common sense. Also by building positive beliefs or convictions that are larger than the negative ones. If we would sit down quietly by ourselves, perhaps, and think some of these things through, we would be forced to make decisions. But by the time we are thoroughly frightened, we are in no mood to make decisions. The immediate terror is greater than any judgment that we can be expected to focus on the situation. So the same problem that answers ignorance in every other form must be applicable to this form. The only answer lies in the individual developing within himself positive resources, resources of understanding and insight that simply will not permit him to take on negative and essentially destructive attitudes. And whenever in the history of civilization, men have followed strongly after constructive beliefs. Demonism has faded out. Whenever these beliefs were themselves compromised and men fell back again upon their terrors, demonism increased again. Therefore, we are reasonably certain that wherever the individual does develop inner resources, he is able to protect himself far better from blind fears. I think that in this particular problem, of course, philosophies such as the Platonic philosophy of Greece and the Buddhistic philosophy of India are of the greatest practical help, because the individual, if he has some kind of a basic philosophy upon which he can lean, will have a tendency not to fall so quickly into a completely chaotic and unphilosophic point of view. And most students, for instance, of mysticism, metaphysics, and esoteric sciences and arts in the United States now in this century believe essentially in a universe that is ruled over by proper, orderly laws. Most mystics and most of those persons who by nature and temperament might possibly come under the pressure of too much belief in invisible forces in life, most of these people claim sincerely that they believe in a good God. They claim one of two things: either that God is good, or if they're rank materialists, that God does not exist. And if God does not exist and there is no purpose to the universe, then we have no reason to suppose that evil exists either, because if there is any enduring principle, there is no doubt from all of our observation and reflection for thousands of years that this principle is essentially good. So if we believe, for example, as in Platonism and Buddhism, that this universe is the product of a divine mind, that this divine mind of itself is inevitably and eternally good, and by the very nature of itself produces out of its own nature only good. If this universe, therefore, is a product of divine consciousness and is ruled over by just laws, wherein all the heaven and earth of justice is their place for psychic plaguing of one person by another, something has to be wrong in the picture somewhere. If a person is subjected to psychic malpractice, which he hasn't earned, which he doesn't deserve, and for which he has no way of protecting himself reasonably, and he must endure this because some other person wishes to take advantage of him, and the one person is not punished for his evil, and the victim is not protected against this evil, what happens to the concept of universal law and order? Well, the answer of the afflicted person usually is that the universe of law and order is a long way off, somewhere in space, and the difficulty of the moment is right here. And this is considered to be irrefutable. But the more we think about it, the more we realize there has to be something wrong with the picture. We have to realize that if it were true that by means of the faculties that we are normally endowed with, we are capable of exercising extraordinary malicious influence over other minds. If it is possible for a mind, for good or for ill, to control the life or destiny of another human being simply because this mind is stronger and the other mind is weaker. And the weaker mind has no defense whatever. We would be in a situation in which the whole world could very well become involved in what might be termed psychic warfare. We would have no out for this situation. In the 1940s, there were probably 300 or 400 million minds, strong minds, many of them, minds of persons horribly hurt and injured, millions of persons going out like the haunting ghosts of antiquity, with all his hatred headed straight at one man, Adolf Hitler. And yet it took the combined armies of the Western powers to finally bring this man to his end in a bunker in Berlin. He was under the most terrible mental pressure imaginable. I personally know individuals who claim to be well up in magic, who were working night and day to destroy him by magical means. All he did was take on some more territory and take another nation over. Hundreds of millions of minds with just cause for the greatest hatred. Didn't get very far with him. What finally got him was himself. The same might be true of Mussolini. The same was certainly true of Joseph Stalin. The probabilities are that almost as great an amount of hatred was turned against Wilhelm Hohenzollern II, who passed a pleasant and quiet old age in Holland. Why? If one individual can, by means of mental suggestion, destroy my life or your life, how is it that they can never seem to get the fellow that needs trouble the most? They don't get him. He keeps right on going. And the reason why he almost certainly keeps on going is because he doesn't believe that these other people can do it. He is so sure of himself. Hohenzollern with his Mein Kampf. Hitler, the man of destiny. Napoleon, the man of destiny. It was their own arrogance, their own conceit, their own stubborn unwillingness to listen to anyone else that finally destroyed them. But the sorrow, the pain, the agony of minds did not do it. The prayers lifted up against these tyrants did not seem to operate very effectively. And yet we like to assume that these same forces that cannot touch these men, even when augmented several millions of times by concerted thinking, that one lonely character of uncertain mind can destroy us. Actually, we have to reevaluate this entire situation. And it is a little difficult to do because there are things we so desperately want to believe. And there is nothing that we want to believe more than that which we see, that which we hear, and that which, which occurs so directly and intimately to us that there seems to be no possible way of evading or avoiding the situation. What we see that has happened seems so factual that we cannot escape it. Now, in Buddhist philosophy, we have these repentant onis, miscellaneous secondary demons, who more or less finally went to the robe and became good Buddhists themselves. And what do we have as the answer to the rest of the problem in Buddhism? There is one thing, and that is perhaps the most important key to all. There is one legitimate cause for the individual to be in trouble, and that is karma. Now, karma is not a monster. It is a good law, absolutely necessary to us. But like the Mio of China and Japan, the ferocious faced deities were always smiling in a kind of a wicked, sardonic way, as much as to say, I shall have you for breakfast. Well, these Mio, or Fudo Mio, represent karma. And they represent the inevitable power of retribution. And to the Eastern way of thinking, karma is this thing which is itself a divine good appearing to us in a horrible and destructive and unfortunate and unpopular appearance. In both Platonism and Buddhism, an individual has to be in need of some type of punishment, or it doesn't come to him. He has to experience that which he has caused. Let us say, for example, that back somewhere in the Middle Ages, a second or third-rate sorcerer appeared who really believed, perhaps, that he could use these evil forces for his own advantage. Perhaps he didn't use them really for his own advantage. Perhaps he didn't even know whether he did or not. All he knew was that when he prayed that a person would die, that person would sicken and die. And it was obvious, therefore, that his prayers had done it. We know today that this does not necessarily constitute the answer, but as far as our medieval sorcerer is concerned, he may have believed it. So we might assume that all the way down through time, there have been individuals who have sold their souls for wealth, for power, for the fulfillment of their ambitions, and for the fulfillment of their appetites. These individuals have conspired against the public good. They have cheated and stolen and bribed. They have done all kinds of unpleasant things. Perhaps when they did them, they thought it was all right to do them. We've got the whole generation of people now making the most stupid possible mistakes with a very good attitude on the whole thing. I've talked to people recently who have admitted frankly that they see no reason why they should not get the last dollar they can, no matter who they take it from. The problem is now you're respectable if you get the dollar. How is no longer a problem or a question. So people compromise their principles down through time. Some did it in the name of religion. Some did it in the name of power. Some did it in the name of business. Some did it in the name of the learned professions. But they exploited. They took unfair advantage. They used knowledge and skill to hurt with. And this essentially is black magic. They used the intelligence which they had to enslave other people instead of to free them. They used their scientific skill to make objects and weapons of destruction. We're producing a lot of them right now. But they took the God-given faculties that man has and have used these faculties to terrorize other people, to destroy the securities of living, and to leave this world perhaps a barren sphere in space if someone doesn't come along and straighten out the problem and the family. Well, these people, unfortunately, are subject to a law that they don't know anything about, most of them. And that is the law of cause and effect. These individuals have set up compensations. They have set up compensations not merely because they were ignorant, because nature takes ignorance into consideration. They are setting up compensations because they know they are wrong, and yet they prefer to do it that way. Every time we get mad at someone, we know we are wrong, but we keep on doing it. And after a while, we have a thrombosis, which is the way nature catches up with us. We do that we want to, the world is wonderful, but a thrombosis is sent for the devil. We haven't realized that in many instances, the devil, which is merely a form of the deity Pluto or Yama or Mara in India, is the luring flame encircled image of karma. The natural ills that we have done coming back to us. But we remember the words of Mephisto in Faust when Faust asked the demon who he is. And Mephisto answers, the spirit of negation, part of the power that still works for good while ever scheming ill. This is karma. In other words, the demon is simply the long way toward the good, the roundabout way through the mistakes that man himself makes. So there is one way in which things can go wrong with us that we cannot explain. Paracelsus, who probably is accredited with knowing more about demons than any other medieval thinker, tells us that there are no miraculous circumstances in life, that a miracle is only the effect, the cause of which is unknown, but that cause must be equal to the effect that it produces. So what we term psychic persecution today is an effect. There has to be a cause for it. And where are we going to find the cause? Where in the universe can we find a just cause that something unfortunate should happen to us? The only possible answer is that the just cause has to be ourselves. There has to be a lesson which we must accept. There has to be unfinished business. When this moves in upon us, we can join the Hindus and the Romans and the medieval Christians and the Goths and the Celts in assuming that an evil spirit is bringing it in a pack on its back. But this evil spirit, so-called, is nothing but the retributional aspect of universal law. A good spirit, a saintly spirit, is the spirit of the reward for good. The evil spirit is the spirit. A good spirit, a saintly spirit, is the spirit of the reward for good. The evil spirit is the spirit of the punishment for ill. So nearly all of the infirmities which we would like to shift onto the shoulders of either some well-intentioned little demon of one kind or another, or upon some person with malicious intention to us, we have to finally face the fact that in the universe, law and order must be maintained. Now, this does not mean for a moment that another person may not try to hurt us. Let us clearly realize that there are a great many parlor sorcerers, even in this century. There are people who would love to hurt us, perhaps. Not many, fortunately, but some. There are certainly individuals who, disbelieving our principles, are praying to God to punish us. Perhaps they have entirely misunderstood and misjudged us, but we are not receiving any constructive mental influences from them. They believe the worst, and because they believe the worst, they keep on sending to us any negative or perverse thought that might be available. Yet have we any defense against this? How are we going to defend ourselves against persons we don't know, perhaps, certainly whose location we could not find, whom we cannot take into court and charge them with some malicious mischief? Persons who perhaps we have gradually come to fear with such an intensive terror that it is destroying our own rest and sleep. And if we were able to pick up the telephone and say to these persons, are you trying to make life miserable for me? Quite possibly the individual would answer yes. I'm doing all I can to make life miserable for you. So here it is. I'm miserable. Somebody else admits they're trying to make me miserable. The circumstantial evidence would almost stand in court. Yet it doesn't have to be true even when it goes that far. Because we are still faced with this constant problem. How are we going to assume any kind of a just existence if another person can make life miserable for us because they want to, and not because there is any justice in it? I think we have to realize that man has been equipped by life with everything necessary to protect him on this dangerous journey which we call existence. Just as surely as he has gradually developed means for the protection of his outer body, as he has developed all that is required to preserve himself as far as possible against almost any creature except his own kind, we realize that man is psychically well-equipped to defend himself. He is psychically set with a key note of vibration. No two human beings have the same keynote. The discovery of this keynote by any other person is an extremely remote possibility. And even assuming that it could possibly be done, there still remains the problem of the ethical universe in which we live. From what we can learn from the older philosophical systems, man is encapsulated or enclosed in a magnetic field. This field, in turn, is surrounded or held by a mysterious thing called the auric egg. The walls of this egg are stronger than steel, but completely invisible. Against this field, any bacterial organism, anything of this nature, has almost no chance whatever of making any inroad upon man. In fact, nearly always, any individual who suffers from a bacterial or germ infection or contagion does so because primarily the germs are already on the inside of this situation. We are carrying all these in our own bodies. And they are coming out in a victorious manifestation because of mistakes that we make in the maintenance of our own economy. If we allow ourselves physically to run down, the germs take over. If we build up, the germs retire. Nature has provided us with the most extraordinary defense mechanism. And this mysterious mechanism extends also into our psychic lives. If we can assume an honest person, owing no psychic debt to anyone, living a constructive life, and free from any immediate pressures of karma, if we assume this person and assume that they are a well-integrated individual, I think we can at the same time assume the so-called malicious psychic persecution is impossible for that person to suffer. something has to happen to break down the natural defenses of the individual. And these breakdowns are the real cause of the whole problem. Somebody who wants to use some mysterious ability to injure us can turn that ability in our direction. But if we are not a proper receiving station, it goes right back to the original sender and causes more trouble than it can ever cause us. Because always the sorcerer finally becomes the victim of his own sorcery. He is setting up negative karma in himself, and this karma will destroy him more rapidly than a bullet. So no matter what he wants to do to somebody else, all he can do is destroy himself. The answer as far as this affects us lies in a number of secondary situations which seemingly have a strong bearing on this matter. One of these secondary situations that I'd like to particularly mention is that there seems to be a proven and demonstrable fact of thought transference. In other words, we are unable to disprove and have no desire to disprove that the thought of one person can be communicated to another. I think we will find as time goes on that this power will increase with man, and that in time it is very possible that the principal form of communication will be by thought transference. Thought transference, however, is only another step beyond radio, television, and the telephone. It began with the telegraph and perhaps smoke signals long, long ago. But when the telephone was invented, we did not have a wave of psychic persecution nor an epidemic of sorcery. We have not had it with television. We've had several forms of negative thinking, but we haven't had any evidence that the fact that I can pick up a telephone and talk to you is any indication that I can hurt you. At least I can always assume that if you don't like what I have to say, you can hang up the phone. Also, there is no reason for you to do anything that I say, regardless of what I say. I can look at you and say I am the ghost of the Pharaoh Ramesses the Great, and I'm paying 10 cents to send this phone call directly from Cairo, and I expect you to do what I tell you to. And in the majority of cases, the receiver will hang up. There is no reason. There is nothing to indicate that thought transference is a legitimate basis of mental persecution. The fact that a thought can get through no more means that the person who receives that thought is vulnerable to some negative force than it would be if he picked up the telephone. Thought transference, it is true, does come into us, perhaps in a rather mysterious way. Sometimes it is not completely obvious how it arrives. We awake in the morning with a sense that we have received the message. We may perhaps seem to hear it in the air around us. Perhaps it is only a mental impression, and we have a strong feeling that something is happening to a person near us or one with whom we have concern of some nature. Tragedies to loved ones, danger to family and children are very frequent causes of this thought transference, and it is quite frequently associated with the death of a person at a distance. I have gone over hundreds of these stories and records. They are on file in many groups and appear in many books if you want to spend the long time necessary to dig them out. But I haven't read one account in which this kind of thought transference carried with it any overt moral persuasion to do anything. at the time of the death of Lord Nelson, Lady Hamilton received at the moment of his death the clear impression of his death. She knew that he was dead. But this was not accompanied by any effort on the part of Nelson to indoctrinate her with anything, hurt her, injure her, or over-influence her. It was just the spontaneous pressure of a great desire to communicate. Now, most of your thought transference has practically no normal vicious associations. Telepathy is not a tool that one person can hurt another mentally. Even presuming, which is difficult, because usually in cases of telepathy, there is a very strong basic rapport between persons involved. But even presuming that an individual with evil intention was able to send a thought of a destructive nature, it still must pass through the consciousness of the receiving person, who has at every step of the way the right to resist it, the right to deny it, the right to declare it invalid and unsound or evil, and therefore to refuse it or to decline it completely. There is no way in which this can be prevented, unless, of course, the person who receives it secretly wants to do what this thought implies. But there is very little probability of transmission on this basis anyway, because we find always that the necessary rapport is sympathy. Hatred is no ground for sympathy. Evil is no ground for sympathy. There is no sympathy between an evil person and a good person. Therefore, the sensitivity necessary for normal communication simply is absent. In addition to these circumstances, we do know that very often, by study, that individuals who claim to have been negatively over-influenced have really, actually, been induced to do that which they have secretly wanted to do, but which they have not wished to acknowledge that they wanted to do, and would prefer to pass the blame on to someone else. If we want to assume for any reason, whatever, that in spite of all these situations, there still appears that we are subject to some kind of negative, destructive force, then I think we should give two areas very definite and complete study and consideration. One is the fact that we are all carrying unfinished karmic business. That it is perfectly possible that at any moment we can stumble over something and fall on our faces. It is perfectly possible that someone will back into us on the road. It is possible at any moment we could have a heart attack. It is also possible that at any moment our business affairs or our various activities in life might be disturbed. It is perfectly possible that our children will not be sympathetic, that we will have friends alienated, that we will suffer many kinds of personal, psychological, physical, neurological infirmities. These are quite possible. No sorcery is necessary in cases of this kind. And this is particularly true where the individual is introverted, hypersensitive, highly nervous, worrisome, or potentially neurotic. Thus, looking around desperately for an explanation for why something happens to us, it is not necessary to have this other sorcerer somewhere in the background as the probable cause of the trouble. It can not impossible that somebody might like to. There are groups in this country at the present time that are teaching various genteel forms of sorcery. They're teaching all kinds of strange beliefs. Some of them are very secret and very strange. Even in New York at the present time, you can buy in open stores various preparations to be used for magical purposes, to overcome your enemies, to create love filters for various reasons or other. And as I think I have mentioned here before, you can buy what is commonly known as the two-pass powders, by means of which you will be guaranteed to throw two sevens in a game of dice. These things can be bought today and are sold in great quantities to people who certainly should know better, but never will. It is quite true there are groups, and one of the things that these groups do, which leads to a great deal of trouble, is to bind their followers with oaths and obligations, warning them that if the follower ever leaves the organization or fails to do what he's told, he will be the victim of the most horrible punishments, that the most malicious forces will be turned against him, and that he will just be made as miserable as he will permit. This is actually done. And it is done by groups that claim to be overflowing with brotherly love and Christian fraternity. It is also quite possible for an individual who finally leaves such a group and has this in his subconscious to assume that his difficulties from that time on are due to this persecution. There are also groups that teach various kinds of development exercises and do it all the time, by means of which the natural nervous system can be very seriously disturbed. The problem can involve a great many different practices which are essentially harmful to the normal function of the body and may consequently set up situations in the nervous system that can lead to exaggerated psychic phenomena, hallucination, and things of this nature. There are also groups that are every day actually teaching various forms of auto-hypnosis, assuring the followers that these are advanced courses in yoga, that all the individual can ever get of a yogic nature is what he hypnotizes himself into believing that he has got. This is going on every day. And a certain type of individual will always fall for it. When he gets into this miraculous blunderland in which all common sense is lost, in which everything that might make law and order evaporates, it is perfectly possible and even reasonable that he should begin to suspect the atmosphere to be simply filled with sprites and monsters, that everything around him is filled with maliciousness, because so many of these practices and theories and stories are themselves essentially malicious. Anyone who would curse somebody for leaving a certain organization isn't fit to have an organization, but there's some of them that do. This type of thing causes a great deal of negative anxiety. And when the natural problems of karma step in, this can have a very definite effect upon the individual. Because it is certain that there's only one kind of karma that is suitable for a person who has tried to over-influence someone else, and that is to believe that somebody else is trying to over-influence him. He has caused sorrow in this area, and it is in this area that he must pay for that mistake. And in one way or another, people are constantly trying to over-influence each other. Therefore, this type of situation is not especially rare. And if it happens to arise from some karmic background in which the original pattern was set down 300 or 400 years ago, the person today does not see the justice of it or the value of it or the meaning of it in his present embodiment. But he passes through these experiences by which he gradually learns the sacredness of the rights of other people to take care of their own affairs. So out of the peculiar juxtaposition of two circumstances, it has come to be assumed that these circumstances are related. It has come to be assumed that the individual who joins some organization for a doubtful reason, coming under some form of unfortunate situation as the result of so joining, then proceeds to suffer from the very conditions which his own consciousness have opened him to. Also, the combination of the fact that gradually he has lost the power to discriminate. He has sold out. And if we sell out to anything, we're in trouble. If we sell out to a political party, the country's in trouble. If we sell out to some theological sect, it may finally compress us and limit us until it destroys our values. Anything that we sell out to will turn on us and hurt us. So we have all kinds of things also that motivate people into various so-called esoteric situations. Probably one of the greatest, the most common of these motivations is simply that the individual is looking for a reason to be alive. These people may be lonely, neurotic people. There are people who desperately want being important, and to them all kinds of esoteric matters contribute to importance. The individual who has never been able to influence himself correctly will love to influence the rest of humanity. With these people trying to find interest in life, trying to find forgetfulness to their various limitations, trying to get new areas of influence, trying to buy their way into a battle of life, trying to develop powers which will enable them to accomplish mentally what they have no desire to earn physically. All kinds of strange motives, some of them too obscure to be discovered until perhaps long afterwards, by the working of karma itself, no human being can discover them. But all of these negative motives, all of these unreasonable attitudes, all these sellouts in which the individual compromises his principles for some concept of gain, all of these come back. And it looks to the individual that persons with whom he has previously worked have turned on him. Perhaps they would like to, but they can get nowhere unless within his own nature he has broken down the patterns of integrity and opened himself to karma. Then the thing he is being punished by is not what the other individual is trying to do to him, but by the compromises which the person himself made, by which it might have been reasonable to assume that the other person could have gotten at him. But the individual is haunting himself. He is doing it in 1,000 different ways. And his old ego, which has been carried with him for many embodiments, is still struggling to unload its toxic load of karma. And if this load of karma in some time or other meant that we had tyrannized, and in some way we have to experience the payment for this, then we shall be the victims of tyranny. Whatever cause we set in motion, if somewhere in long ago we prayed the gods to afflict somebody else, we will sometime awake and think we hear someone else praying with gods to afflict us. I've actually had people come into my office here and ask me if I wouldn't pray for the death of one of their relatives so they could inherit his money. Now, that an individual like that should come finally to believe that somebody else is praying to get rid of them is nothing short of poetic justice. It is not a sign that the bottom is out of the ethical universe. It is not a sign there are no laws in nature. And there is certainly not a sign that good people can be the victims of bad people. Buddhism and Brahmanism and Hinduism all teach that another man can take our body. We can be killed. We can be shot. We can be stabbed. Or we can in time simply die from natural causes. Our physical bodies are vulnerable. They belong to this world and they can be taken from us by the various incidents and accidents of life. But to all these systems, this is not important. Actually, the only thing that is important to man is the integrity of his own consciousness. While he is able to keep this, the rest of his fate and destiny are secure. There is nothing else that he need to fear. There is nothing that he can successfully fear. And there's nothing that fear can do for him except make him sick. Therefore, if a person finds themselves in this kind of a situation where they think that they are the victims of some malicious mental force being turned against them, let them always remember certain things. That whether such a force exists or not, the fact that we believe that it is doing this to us can do us the greatest harm. Also, most metaphysicians of even the traditional school tell us frankly and firmly, and have said so again and again, that if we change this believing, if we return only good for evil, if we return only strength against weakness, if we reply only in the most constructive way to any seeming circumstance which is incomprehensible to us, we are then, by every level, every count, and every theory, doing the greatest possible good for all situations concerned. In other words, if in the presence of some such a negative thought, we can simply go no further than to say that we still believe that there's somebody trying to hurt, but that the only answer that we have is to bless that other person and to realize that as far as the universal principle is concerned, this person who might be trying to hurt us should be the object of sympathy. They are the one in trouble, not us. They are the one who are in need of assistance. For the moment, for any reason, we wish to hurt another, we are in the most desperate danger ourselves. Not because of the fact that we are opening our natures to some strange, infernal, perditional punishment, but simply because this type of thinking sets up psychosomatic patterns within ourselves which will destroy our bodies, minds, and hearts. For any individual who is anxious to do good, desirous of exploiting anyone else for any reason, should be the object of our greatest and deepest sympathy. They are not big, strong people endangering us. They are little weak people endangering themselves. If we will take this attitude consistently, we will find that they cannot directly or indirectly do any harm to anybody. And the main point is that whether we believe they are doing anything to us or not, and whether in the course of time we discover that the whole thing was our own attitude, and not anyone trying to hurt us, regardless of how we want to explain it, our own cheerful, constructive, idealistically, spiritually correct attitude at that time is our greatest protection and our greatest solution. So regardless how we want to explain it, the answer always remains that we must gradually replace fear with faith, that we must lose all interest in assuming or believing that anything or anyone wants to injure us or can injure us. Now, this does not mean that we don't have to read the small type in the contract. This does not mean that physically we are not subject to the common laws or the practices of our times. But it does mean that in things relating to spiritual matters and to religious matters, the individual is absolutely safe as long as his own attitudes are absolutely constructive. As long as he knows firmly and completely within himself that he is setting in motion known negative psychic forces, he can be perfectly certain that no one else can hurt him, but most of all, he will not hurt himself. And if this thing, if attitude is really appreciated and really understood, really worked with, there would not be a great deal of black magic in our generation. Because black magic is not just something that another person can practice on us. Black magic is something we can practice on ourselves. Black magic arises the moment we try to solve the problems of our own experience negatively. The moment the individual believes in the reality of evil, he is just as much practicing black magic as the individual who turns the force against someone else, because he is now turning negation against himself, and he is certain ultimately to frighten himself out of his own wits. Now, there are many episodes and incidents described of the raising of spirits on crossroads late at night. And these spirits have been occasionally seen. And any Irishman could tell you they can be seen any time. All you have to be is a good Irishman to see them. Therefore, we recognize this problem. But I talked to an Irishman who, I don't know whether he was in the right direction from the standpoint of descent or not, but he obviously had kissed the Blarney Stone, not once, but many times. And we talked about it one day. He said, yes, Ireland is full of spirits. It's full of all kinds of little creatures that come out of the earth following the plowman. You'll see little creatures rising in the mist of dawn or in the mist of evening. And you'll see fairy rings under the trees where the flowers form circles. And you can see them, and you can hear the leprechauns out at night taking shoes. You can hear them almost any time you want to. And there's one little fellow always sitting with a pot of gold or a crock of gold at the end of a rainbow. All these things, the children see them all the time. Everybody sees them. At least they think they do. So I asked this Irishman once, I said, do these little spirits ever bother anybody? Oh, he said, be gone. Why should they bother anybody? Of course not. The only time they bother you is when you bother them. If you try to take the leprechaun's crock of gold away from him, he'll work magic on you. And he'll try his best not to let you have it. But if you want to sit down quietly and watch the little folks at play under the trees, they don't mind. They're very happy. In fact, they probably don't know you're there. So he assured me that unless somebody bothered them, they never bothered anybody else. And that's good Scotch folklore, and it's good Irish, and it's good even for the rather superstitious folks down on Sicily who have a lot of this type of belief also. But all these things, nobody bothers anybody unless we bother them. and it is the same in nature. The crock of gold at the end of the rainbow might symbolize worldliness and all the mysterious forces that contribute to it. When man is willing to destroy to get that crock of gold, then the spirits that guard it turn upon him. And there's a story in Germany that it's still the little Nibelungen people still guard the treasures of the earth. And you have to go to them, and you can dig the treasure forever, but you'll never find it because they always hide it from you. What you have to do is to first of all convince the little people that you have earned it. Then they'll reveal it to you instantly. These are moral fables. There's no question about it. But the treasures of the earth really are guarded in some way. Like happiness and peace of mind and peace of soul. These things are guarded. And perhaps there are little spirits as the Greeks saw them and the Roman lairs and Thanates. And these little spirits are the guardians of things to protect man from ever having what he doesn't deserve. And they're wonderfully wise at it. And a man who wants wealth without earning it considers these little spirits demons, because they stand between him and what he wants. But everywhere, the little people, according to the old legends, are kindly and friendly spirits. And if human beings, with so many other superstitions that are not worth anything, would add perhaps one that is worth something, and develop the simple superstition that the air around them and the earth beneath their feet and all the elements in which we live and all the natural resources with which we are surrounded, that all of these things are naturally good. If we want to assume they have spirits with them, we don't know. That isn't important. But that whatever there is beautiful, is good, and is kindly. And the unknown and the unseen are only the extensions of this. That a thing doesn't suddenly become bad because we can't see it anymore. But that space far out, there's no more people with evil than the glens and the fens of Ireland. That these things are merely the unknown, unconquered universe of realities extending on and on, filled with law, filled with beauty, and filled with good. And if man will keep faith with this good, and he will live harmoniously with it, and will not break the patterns by his own negative psychology and create a negative psychotic condition in himself, he can live on through the years of his life and from life to life in a universe that is essentially good, which has some problems, some unfinished business, in which we are ready to pay our debts, and we are ready to try to do to others as we have others do to us, but with it all, a great basic faith. And if we have this faith that everything is essentially good in principle, and that in man this principle may be obscured, but it is still basically there. And beyond the selfishness of our daily conduct, there is in every person a spirit that is trying to be good. And that this spirit, through karma, is ultimately going to win. And little by little, the failings and weaknesses of man will be dissolved by universal law. And in the end, we will all come to that good which was originally ordained for us. If we keep these thoughts in mind and do not permit ourselves to wallow in self-pity, negation, fear, and doubt, we won't have any trouble with black magic. We won't have any trouble with demons. And if by any chance we should meet one somewhere, he'll be a very kindly little fellow who will be more amusing than difficult. Because actually, there's no reason why the old Buddhist monk wasn't quite correct when he went by one of these little demons, simply patted it on the head and blessed it. It was all part of a good world. It was all part of a universe of good things. And if the good finds itself strong and rich in our own consciousness, there's nothing else that we need to fear. Well, I think our time is up. Thank you very much.
Enhance your mind. Recharge your spirit. Awaken your soul. Enhancing Awareness Radio. Enhancing awareness with clarity.
All right. Greetings, 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 everybody. Thank you guys for tuning in to another broadcast of Enhancing Awareness Radio. Spiritual Soul Sunday, guys. I'm your host, Haru. And as you guys know, on Spiritual Soul Sunday, it's kind of like an intimate setting where I either bring a guest in or I either have something very important that I want to pretty much get off my mind, my heart, my chest. You know, it's pretty much from the ear platform, we had like different hosts like every day, you guys. Back in 2019 to about end of 2020, it was booming. I mean, we had like something going on every day. But, you know, as things started to dwindle down, you guys, I wanted to have my own particular segment. And so this was the birthing of Spiritual Soul Sunday. But we literally have 34 minutes left. Okay, so Eternal, just so you know, we have 34 minutes left. But as you guys know, who are no strangers to ear, we like to also include other people's understanding, research, teachings, you know, versus our own all the time. You know what I'm saying? I don't want us to talk all the time. You know, sometimes we have to be a student and observe, and sometimes we have to listen, you know, and life is about balance, right? So on this particular episode, you guys, I wanted to, we've done shows on Black Magic before. We've done, but this show was really called The Invisible Spell because Eternal had mentioned the invisible spell that has been cast upon us. And the song, such a beautiful song. I think Nina Simone originally sang that. But I put a spell on you, you know. Like, what are these spells? What is the invisible spell? And can the invisible spell, the one that you do not know about, be the most effective? You know what I'm saying? The things that go on behind the screen that we don't know, that are being cast upon us, that are being played, you know, the emotional, go back and listen to the show that we did on dark psychology, guys. If you have not already, a good topic for you to study is going to be dark psychology, especially emotional intelligence, because it seems that emotional intelligence is one of the keys, one of the big pieces on the chessboard. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, that emotional intelligence can be kind of cunning, if you will. So Eternal, are you there? Peace, on to you. Okay, Eternal, you may be muted.
Greetings.
I know I came in late. Greetings. We got 32 minutes left. So greetings.
Whatever time it is, you know, like you said, we got to sometimes sit at the feet of others who already have the fire, the torch. How are you today?
You know, I am, I'm in a space of reflection, but it's a divine reflection, you know, just this broadcast, divine reflection. So I'm feeling, I really can't tell you how I feel, because it's not sad, but it's not challenged, but divine practice. Reflections, you know, the practice, yeah. What you preach type deal, you know what I mean? So I'm reflecting.
I like the fact that you spoke on about the psychological, basically the emotional intelligence that we use to describe, mm-hmm. you know, the way we're flowing with things. I had a being that was older than me and had babies more than I have. And of course, I can't have them out of me, but being a part of it, you know what I mean? And not only being a part of it, seeing how us brothers with children, how do we really, you know, see us? And how do we see after you have the child, what do us as men do when we're having a child? What do we do when the child is in the body? What do we do after the child comes out?
Mm.
You know, these are the pre-postpartum that we don't talk about. And so our mothers and our fathers, when they grow up and they say, oh, you did this and you got to learn to do this, and then they cut kind of like corners to kind of get you to speed up to learn what, don't do what I did and how you do that. I don't even know what you did yet. And then be like, I don't talk about it. And you're like, how, well, why didn't we talk about it? Because now I did what you just did, you know. And so it's a point of how much communication do we really have for one another, right? And because it's emotional intelligence, how much does it play the invisible spell that we don't see and can't tell? Because we didn't tell it in the first place. It's, you have the truth. Everything been in front of us a long time ago. And that's why when, you know, the mother sees the daughter and she's like, I'm pregnant. And then her head goes down. And she's like, well, I thought you would be happy. And then she starts crying. And then you're like, I didn't want you to turn out like I did or worse. And you're like, why didn't you tell me what you was going through? Because I was shutting up and I didn't know when to really tell you. And then it was like hard to tell you. But then, you know, you're here already. And now you're older now. And I'm still waiting for the right moment, and still ain't the right moment. Now I feel like it's the wrong moment to tell you now. And here it is. What's left and left over. We've been creating this black magic on ourselves. We say, oh, I want something. I want something. I want a baby. Right. Rumpelstiltskin. You ever heard of that story?
I have heard of it, yes.
Rumpelstiltskin wanted something. He wanted the baby. He wanted to create the baby. Not he wanted to be in there and take the circumstances of the baby, make it or not. He just wanted, his greedy tail, just wanted the baby. So he's like, oh. So he tricked his sister in order to give up her baby. But in order for, you know, I'm paraphrasing, so that wasn't speeded up. He finally actually said, the only way you can, like, basically, you know, have your baby become free is you know my name. He was like, you got to say it three times in order for me to, you know what I mean? Like, then the seal is broken and, you know, you had your baby back. Eventually, throughout the whole story, she ended up finding out his name because he was so cocky, he ended up cocky. Rumpelstiltskin. Rump and still in skin. So anyway, it's so perverted. Yeah, so, you know, so into the Caucasian concept, they end up, he sang his name, and then that's how she found out, and she called it out, and needless to say, the spell was broken, and she ended up having a child back. That's a story, of course. Not in reality. Most of us who end up having our child taken away from us don't get our child back. We call it vaccination. We call it going to school. We call it going into the military. Peace, brother. We call it making it a point to you giving your child to society because you want to get Medicaid, special aid, and all the other aids. And then all of a sudden, it's mature aid that they Gatorade your child. And your child is a part of the Gators. Sickening. Zip code Jim Crow. We've been missionaries and missions that we didn't even know. So when the egg fell down, as Humpty Dumpty fell and broke his crown, it was the prince that fell down from him being an actual king or a pharaoh. He was in this place of, you know, hierarchy, but then there was hierarchy in a different way. To portray the priest and the priestess that they call A, took out the word day. Now the day is in charge of the bays. And the bays being water, like land, this is where it gets your L from, you know, the one who actually gives you the stories that we know about way back from whatever. And that's why the navigators are the truth of life, the marketers of marketeering things became musketeering things. And now the engineering of all things is basically coming from technology, this astral, you know, way of galactic, celestial ways of, you know, movement. How do we see it more than even ourselves? This is that collective in itself. Like, you are running into a constant you. And what's going to surprise you is you keep finding more of yourself. And when you find out more of yourself, now you want to ask the question, are y'all all interrelated of yourself? So when you constantly keep doing this, you're going to be a reminder to yourself. And that's what makes us, that's not just emotional.
that part. Sure. That when you see yourself, you know, constant reminders of yourself, you know what I mean? It's like a wow. It's a, when you experience it, you know, I guess a level of awareness, like, I'm just saying, I get what you're saying.
Sorry.
No. So I'm sorry, you guys.
No.
All right, so, you guys, the constant reminders of yourself, you know, it's like, you know, it comes back to the reflections, you know, like you'll start seeing, you know, yourself, or you'll start holding yourself accountable as, you know what I mean, in your reflection, you know. I can't really explain it, but those of you that have experienced it, you know exactly what I mean. I'm talking about, and I feel that that's what Eternity is explaining. But when it comes to black magic, you guys, what does black magic mean to you? What does white magic mean to you? Right. So I'm gonna read something. What is black magic? Now this comes from one of my friends, Renee Hamilton. Excuse me. Before I do that, let me back up real quick. Eternal was just speaking on the invisible spell. So the invisible spell that we have casted, you know, he used a great example of how we do that. You know, like we raise our children, you know, we tell them, don't be like me, don't do this, don't do this, don't do that, you know what I mean? Don't do this, don't do that. And then, you know, what did they say, they said, be careful. Well, Michael Jackson said, be careful because the lie can one day become the truth. You know what I'm saying? Michael Jackson said that also. And also, we have to be careful. I lost my train of thought. Oh, okay, they hung him up. Oh, his car got dropped. Damn it. All right, cool. Wait, did it hang up all together? No! Oh, okay, it didn't hang me up. Okay, oh, wow. 708, I do apologize. Okay, all right. So it hung Eternal up. Okay, so that's cool. But what I feel that Eternal was saying, I have 22 minutes left, guys. Normally we can go. And to be put in a time crunch is kind of like, okay, shit, what's more important, you know, is hierarchy than the other. But anyway, guys, you know, we don't go off a script here. I take notes, you know what I'm saying? We just free flow. But the invisible spell, you guys. So we do that a lot. You know, we have our parents teach us, you know, I don't want you to be like me. I don't want you to, you know, do this. And the universe doesn't understand no. The universe doesn't understand don't. You know what I'm saying? So what kids learn by is we learn by example. You know what I'm saying? So let's just use a ratio. Don't quote me on this, but let's use a ratio of 80% of what our parents taught us not to do. What do? We end up doing that very same thing because why? You know, this life and how life flows is about action and cause and effect and, you know, the law of attraction, you know, all of these things that are invisible that we do not discuss and that we do not talk about. You know what I'm saying? So the invisible spell may indeed be that stuff that we choose to hold back on. We don't want to tell our children our past because we're afraid. We so badly don't want our kids to end up like me. And you know what I'm saying? Your kids end up being like you. Why? Because you kept the truth for them. You out of the name of love, you know what I'm saying? And forgive. Look, I forgive you, mother, right? You know what I'm saying? I forgive you, father, you know? And that's just a general statement because they kept a lot of the truths for us in ways of protecting us. But what if these are the invisible spells that we have cast among one another through generations. How do we break the invisible spell? Well, first of all, we tell the fucking truth. You know, that shit that we, and, you know, one of my, Marcia Owens has been on this podcast, and she said, you know, Keith, sometimes the truth can kill some people. And you know what? You're right. You know what? You're right. But if I may be boldly enough to say, maybe that needs to happen. And I say that maybe that needs to happen because the purification and the cleanse, because first of all, death is a program, it's a hoax, right? So, you know, if we really believe that, you know what I'm saying, then what are we fearing? What are we afraid of? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I mean, do we continue to loop and play ring around the rosy with the lies? Or do we purify this bitch and, you know, really truly, you know, get back in order? You know, or is this order? I'm not confused, but, you know, it's like at a point now where I'm like, I'm tripping over my words. It gets mind-blowing. Anyway, black magic is what we cast upon ourselves, you guys. So black magic is a crisis with black magic. When we attempt to solve issues of our own creation negative, right? So, first of all, we're creating all of this. Everything in which you are experiencing or growing through depends on your perception and how you look at it, is of our own creation. What am I creating? Many of us have never even asked ourselves. Many of us have never even, probably once or twice in our lives where we looked ourselves in the mirror, you know what I mean? But how constant are we looking ourselves in the mirror? And we are, you know what I mean? So what is Black Magic by Renee Hamilton, right? So what is Black Magic? The goal of all black magic is to get you to see and feel something that is not real, nor there at all. It is to get you to believe the illusion, thereby eventually persuading you to give all of your precious life force energy to the illusion. Sounds like America. The black magic spell, you know what? America is one big black magic spell. Boom, there it is. The black magic spell is a parasite, the virus, the program virus. America is a program virus, the matrix program virus, to your precious life force energy. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm adding to his stuff when I say programs and all that. That's me adding. But this is just a – I'm going to put this in our Enhancing Awareness Radio group, guys. So go – if you are a member of our group, please be sure to go to Facebook. Type in Enhancing Awareness Radio under groups. You should find our group there. It's a green all see an eye there. You know, green background, all see an eye. You can join our group, and this post will be there. Next paragraph. The basis and foundation of all black magic is repetition. For without a story being repeated to you constantly over and over and over again, like America, there would be no way for black magic to hold on to you. So repetition is how they do it, not just how they do it, how we do it to ourselves, because it's what we allow. You know, how long are we going to blame Whitey, you know what I'm saying, for shit that we allow? The foundation of all black magic, hypnosis, and mind control is repetition. Repetition forces your attention, your mind to focus upon the same thing over and over and over and over and over again, imprinting the same imagery, there it is, and energy into your consciousness, thereby shaping your reality. This is why I told people to be careful with selfies. and be careful with, you know, people that you see constantly just taking selfies and posting selfies of themselves and, you know, imagery of this, or they show us violence and all that. Y'all, this is black magic. This is spell casting. Okay? I don't give a fuck. Look, the world, we are at a spiritual war and the world is burning. The last thing we want to see is your selfie, okay? You know what I mean? This is repetition, black magic hypnosis, mind control enters your life in the form of beliefs. Because all beliefs can do is repeat the same message over and over again. Imprint. Okay, this is the paragraph I just read. Anything that repeats more than twice is 100% a program. Your belief repeated a thousands of times a day. In fact, you cannot even turn your beliefs off. You have to. That's that. That have you ever been driving, or you just have you ever just noticed that your mind can come up with a song, or a song can be in your head just came out of nowhere? It's because it's been imprinted. It's been repeated. You know, when you listen to the radio, you know, how many of you listen to the radio and the songs is the same song keep coming on like 100 times. The song probably came on at least 100 times a day. Do you think that's by accident? No, that is not by accident. That is to imprint your mind, y'all. This is mind control. One of Hitler's tactics, black magic, one of Hitler's tactics in black magic was music. So if they control your music, just like they control your food, black magic rituals. You know what I mean? And it's cast upon you without you even, it's unknowingly cast upon you. You don't even know what the fuck going on. You just innocently living life, not knowing that black magic is done on us every day, all day. Hello? The repetition, black magic, there's a levels to this too, y'all. But I'm just speaking on a level in where it was done off of us. But we also cast it upon ourselves. Have you guys been in situations, you know, where you got mad at somebody and, you know, you like, I want to get back at them? And some of us that do know magic and do know how to cast spells and, you know, using pictures and all that shit. And then we wondering why the spell may work. It may not work. Depends on your opponent, if you will, you know, of how strong they are spiritually, rather than, you know, to, you know what I'm saying? So we fight against one another. We beat each other down in the background. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, is this love or war? You know, like, what the fuck are we really doing out here, y'all? So anything that repeats more than twice is 100% a program. Your beliefs repeated thousands of times per day. In fact, you cannot even turn off the beliefs. You have no control over them. I wouldn't say that you can't turn them off, but you do have the ability to sway them and to manipulate. If you are a true alchemist, you do have the ability to manipulate them, all right? You have to control. You have no control over them because they are not yours. They are the black magic program of repetition running within your subconscious. Okay, so Renee is just pretty much making a statement. He can also teach how to, you know, but I just want to let people know there is a way out. Like, you don't have to, you know, be a part of this black magic program anymore. You can opt out at any time. It takes work. You clearly understand that computers can get viruses, and so can humans too. These human viruses are called beliefs because they do not let you see anything new. They repeat Dr. Strange. They repeat. Y'all remember Dr. Strange, the movie, the loop scene? That's America. That's America. That's the timelines. That's the timelines of the elite. The invasion, if you will. The invasion was indeed the virus installation. They repeat the same message over and over again like the broken record, no stopping, no belief. Right now you are haunted by voices in your mind that won't go away. These voices are beliefs. They are black magic programs. All beliefs are black magic programs. There is not one belief in existence that is not a black magic hypnosis program. All beliefs are black magic. Okay, and the reason why, guys, let's just say religion. You were born into religion. Have you ever just been born into religion and, you know, you woke up and you're like, I don't believe that shit Granny and them saying. I don't believe that bullshit. Like, what? Like, it's not your own. Just because you're born into some shit, just because your parents believe some shit, you guys, that does not mean that that's your shit. You know, I tell people, give your parents back their shit. Give your families back their shit. If that's not what you are and that's not what you do, give them back their shit. That the morality, the moral, all that shit is not yours. And to whatever the truth is what you decide at the end of the day. You do not have to abide or go by any type of family, anything. I don't give a fuck. Structure, whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? If that's not your shit, you do not have to be imprisoned for it, period. What is white magic, okay? So that's black magic. Let's get into one. Let's get into white magic. This is your way out. This is your opt-out, right? What is white magic then? You're 100% naturally free. Unlimited imagination is white magic. This is because your natural 100% free imagination feels you and does not limit you like beliefs do. You know what I mean? Nor is your imagination like even capable of repetition. Thus, when you decide to let go of your repetitious, limited black magic beliefs, then your 100% unlimited eternal magic, divine imagination will be there to catch you. Hold on, y'all. All right. Now you see why the television program is actually the black magic programming, because it is constantly suggesting we got to watch out for suggestions too, guys, because somebody can suggest something, and in a suggestion, and I know I teach, you know, don't give advice, give suggestions, but even in suggestions, somebody can suggest some. I just called a friend doing it last night. You know, he was suggesting shit to me, and he was suggested, and it was such a good thing to do, such a good idea. And I almost, like, as kind-hearted as I am, I almost, you know, kind of just naturally gave in, you know, to his desire or his request. And then I caught myself. I was like, I'll let you know. You know, you can't just suggest some shit and expect me to, you know, abide by your desire. And I had noted that, you know, this friend of mine actually does this as a way of getting through life. You know what I mean? So we got to be emotional manipulation, dark psychology, black magic shit is real, and it is played on us more than we know. The media, TV, all control. So this is just something to ponder on. I love Renee. Renee Hamilton is his name. Amen. So I'm trying to find a clip, you guys. Hold on, let me see what this is. Oh no, we got just a few minutes left. It's just time to play a song. So thank you guys. I hope, you know, you guys got something out of this. Not I hope. Those that know and those that are ready and those that are truly growing. I don't care if it was 5 minutes of this three-hour show, 2 minutes of this three-hour show, you got something out of it, you know. So we're going to speak life, you know what I mean? So join us next weekend, guys, same time, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central on both days, Motivational Classroom, Spiritual Soul Sunday here on every Sunday. I love you guys. I love you to life. And, you know, keep growing, guys. Keep, you know, those reflections, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, impurity and imagination, guys, you know, so much beauty and so much life and so much love can be created out of that. You know what I'm saying? So the energy, please know that the age of Pisces was for that. You know what I'm saying? For the black magic and the, you know, it worked. You know what I'm saying? It worked. So, you know. But we are in a different cycle, okay? So we're in a different cycle. And it's a bliss, pure imagination, heart chakra, sacral chakra, healing in balance, in love, not pimping. So Love you, love you, love you. And, yeah, till next time, guys. Peace.
Does the world ever frighten you?
Sometimes.
Well, what do you do about that?
Well, I just close my eyes, make a wish. I go into my mind and create the world the way I want it to be.
Huh.
I'll show you. Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination.
We'll begin with a spin, traveling in a world of our creation. What we'll see will defy explanation.
If you want a view of paradise, simply look around and view it.
Anything you want to do it. Want to change the world?
There's nothing to it. There is no life I know
to compare with your imagination.
Living there, you'll be free
if you truly sensational
la, la, la.
Sensation.
La, 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 la.
If you want to see magic lands,
close your eyes and you will see one.
Wanna be a dreamer, be one.
Anytime you please,
and please save me one.
Yeah.